Across the Park podcast is proud to be sponsored by Globe Gas and Heating. For the best kitchen and bathroom renovations, boiler servicing and repair, and central and underfloor heating in the Northwest, head over to globecentralheating.com and quote Across the Park for a free quote. Hello, welcome to episode 18 of Across the Park podcast. Up them toffees. I am flying, absolutely flying. Four wins out of four. Welcome back. My name is, of course, Ian Mills, joined as always by Gary Judge in the lovely Pod Cafe studios. Nice and warm in here. This is going to be a little bit of a hybrid show. We're going to talk Burnley. We're going to look ahead to Fulham. We're also going to look back at some of our favourite moments, our worst moments from 2024, because this will be our last studio show of the year. 2023, sorry, I'm racing ahead. 2023, this is our last studio show of the year. Me and Judgy will do an instant match reaction or two, and then we're done. But we're going to cover the podcast as a 2023 review as well. Thanks as always, like I said there, to the Pod Cafe Studios. Nice and warm in this cold December day. Great kit. They're over on our socials at Pod Cafe. If you want to go and have a look at our socials, which is at Across the Park PC. Thanks as always to our amazing sponsors, Veyr Clothing and Globe Gas and Heating. You've heard enough. You've heard enough. You want to hear about football. Judgy, four out of four. Four wins out of four. This is after what the Premier League and the independent panel done to us. Saturday, team news comes in. Change of personnel, change of formation, possibly a few blues nervous. So impressive.
Absolutely, yeah, effortless in the end, wasn't it? Well, not effortless, and we're going to go back to that. Obviously, the effort of the team's not gone unmissed, and effort of, you know, individuals. But again, doesn't matter who he puts in at the moment, doesn't matter what system he plays, doesn't matter what position certain players play in, they seem to adapt, they seem to find a way to win. I would say find a way to win. I thought it was relatively comfortable.
Yeah.
Against a team that were desperate for those points, a team that had had something of a resurgence as well. It's just so encouraging, really encouraging, and absolutely delighted for the team, delighted again for the amazing away fans who got another fantastic evening, afternoon.
So loud as well.
So loud, yeah, so loud. I'm just relentless. And yeah, it's just, I wouldn't go so far as to call it a juggernaut at the moment, but it is just, we're ploughing on, aren't we? And we look so difficult to play against. What really stuck out to me in the first 10-15 minutes is we absolutely suffocated them. They couldn't move. And we've done that a few times. And going back to Brentford at the start of the season, Brentford couldn't get out for the first 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, as an opposition player, facing that amount of pressure early on in the game, you're thinking, can they keep this up? And they do. They keep it up for large periods of the game. And we are so difficult to play against. So pleasing. And I know we're going to come back to the individual analysis of the game. But another fantastic 3 points and well deserved.
No, absolutely. I mentioned the fans there. And there's one of our friends, Hands of Hands Tour. She put a tweet up. And she said, these fans who've been going for the last two years have seen four wins in 2 years. And now these fans have seen four away wins on a bounce. And you can see it, can't you? When Sky Sports dare to flash to our fans, and then when they've got to show our fans at the end, you can see our fans, me and you, who aren't really away going supporters, well, home season ticket holders go to the odd one or two. But the fact, it seems like everyone's really behind this team and enjoying it.
Oh yeah, they are. They absolutely are. And as we well know, you know, we've had our seasons where we've went home and away. It's a way of life, isn't it? Yeah. It's just part of your working week, and you've got your own little groups of mates that you go with. You've got your routines when you go away, and those away days just seem to end with a defeat, and that's just the way it is. So I can't imagine how boss those days must be at the moment.
Yeah.
When you're topping off all the great stuff that happens as part of the things that you can control, and then the stuff you can't control, which is on the pitch, just going so well. So yeah, they deserve every ounce of happiness and pleasure they're getting out of it, and I'm sure those hangovers hurt a little bit more, but then, you know, the sweet as well at the same time.
Absolutely. Look, I mentioned there that the fans look like they're enjoying it. The players, to me, look like they're enjoying it. There's quotes from Amadou Onana today where he's saying he has to go to the away end. It's like, thank you. He's really enjoying it. He's saying he can't wait to play against Fulham. He looks like he's enjoying his football. There's a number of other players, but not only watching this team, I'm starting to feel this team, and I haven't felt like that for a long, long time. The Carlo team in lockdown, it was hard to connect because of the lockdown, but I liked that team. Before then, I'm going back probably Martinez's first season, really, where I had this feeling, and it just looks to me and feels to me togetherness. Is that the right word?
Yeah, it's definitely one of a number of words that sums up the way that not just the players, but the fans, the club have kind of rallied around and have created this mentality of, you know, never say die, and you know, we're going to be ugly, we're going to be hard to beat, but they're all enjoying it, as you say, like the players. And you know what was great to see on Saturday? Ben Govery come in and he was one of the best players on the pitch on Saturday. Yeah. He looked like he plays every game this season.
That clearance.
Hadn't kicked the ball. Yeah, that clearance was phenomenal. But he's got that in his locker. You know, he was a very exciting, particularly under Carlo. You mentioned the era under Carlo. He was brilliant at left back there for a number of months, yeah, wasn't he? Right. And he struggled. He's lost his way a little bit. But, you know, the circumstances allowed him to come into the team at the weekend. You know, you'd suggest that he's in the team almost to look after other players in that team as well. But he was brilliant. But he just looked so happy as well.
Yeah.
He didn't look like a forlorn figure, someone who's frustrated with not being in the team. I'd seen him a few times actually come off the bench at the home games and getting involved in, you know, the celebrations. You can see the players are not only enjoying the match day and the victories, they seem to be enjoying just the general being around the club.
Monday to Friday,
exactly. The training ground, they enjoy being with each other. And again, I've said it a few times in recent weeks, you cannot underestimate or not credit enough Kevin Thelwell in this and the part he plays in keeping certain players of the club, i.e. Michael Keane. And I know that may not have been top of his wish list, but I'm pretty sure they could have done a deal, or there's probably a number of deals on the table they could have done this summer to get rid of Michael Keane, even if it was 50% of his wages that we paid. They've chose to keep him, or there maybe hasn't been a deal there, but they've chose to keep him, and they've used him sparingly, or Dychaz. But again, every single player in that squad at the moment is playing a part. You know, again, Lewis Dobbin comes on at half-time. All right, he wasn't fantastic, but he's put a shift in an unfamiliar position. Players seem to be coming in and out of the team on the fringes. I didn't think would be able to contribute. Nathan Patterson, brilliant on Saturday. So, no, you could go through a list of probably 16, 17, 18 players that have contributed over the last 6 weeks, and that's the most pleasing thing. In a period where every team seems to be moaning about injuries and suspensions, and we've got some of them. We've got our fair share of injuries and suspensions at the moment, but nobody's moaning about it, and we're getting on with it. We're getting points, and long may that continue.
So not only Burnley, if we expand it to the last four games, or maybe even, you know, Sean Dyche has pushed the narrative, and probably rightly so, that before this deduction, Everton were playing well. The Man United game was a little bit the exception to the rule. I think that was just a massive game for everybody. But if you look at this period that we're in, what are you most impressed by? We've said some words there, like togetherness. We've said some individual performances. We've said the team look together. The fans are behind it. You mentioned there that we look really hard to play against. We've got a plan. What have you most been impressed by this season?
The tactical flexibility. Now that we look at it and we reflect on the fact we played a different system on Saturday, we played players in different positions. We've lost to Corey at half-time. Again, Ben Godfrey's come into the team. Michael Keane, who's been indifferent. I think the flexibility of some of them players playing in multiple positions, you know, McNeil playing two or three different positions at the weekend. Jack Harrison's played in different positions. You know, Garner has played right back, defensive mid, attacking midfield, you know, box to box. That for me, and the way that the team has just been, players and individual players have been able to slot into different positions, but the way in which we play doesn't seem to change, and you know, the work on and off the ball. So that for me has been the outstanding part, and I say outstanding deliberately, the outstanding part of this team this season. I mean, you say Dyche was saying we were playing good before the deduction. Dyche actually thought we played well the first few games of the season, and the way certain Evertonians were saying that, I do remember, and you hate it when I come on and talk about, oh, you know, this, that and the other, when we've been beaten by maybe a poor side at home, but there were still suggestions in them early games, despite the defeats, that, you know, we're creating a lot of chances, we just weren't taking our chances, we didn't have a striker in the team, etc. But to answer your question directly, for me, it's the way in which the team is still able to play well and as effectively, regardless of what system we play, and regardless of what position certain players play. Dwight McNeil, the first 20 minutes of the weekend looked like...
Someone told me, and I say someone, Everybody told me he played left back. Did he? He was just attacking. I know he did, he was so attacking.
But he got down that flank. Yeah. So much aggression and so much pace, which, you know, he's not naturally gifted with play. He's like a bit of a... he hasn't got a change of pace. It's just the same pace, yeah. Isn't it? It's just like a
one-speed train.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But he's playing with so much aggression and belief in his ability, and that, I think that spread throughout the team. Players that don't look quick look a yard quicker because they're playing with so much confidence and they're so definite in the way, you know, in their actions. And yeah, look, that's confidence. That's what confidence does to any team, and that's not going to last forever, and that will be the interesting thing, you know, when we kind of... When, and it is a matter of when, we're not going to win every single game, regardless of how the song goes, and I'd love to see us keep going, but we're not going to win every game. It will be interesting when that confidence maybe drains a little bit and we're maybe tested a bit more, but for now, I'm going to enjoy it.
8 games won this season, and you know me, I'm a sucker for a stat. You can put a stat on Twitter and I'll send it to you and we'll talk about it. There's one stat that stood out to me. 8 games we've won this season, all with less than 50% possession of a football. Never played it, can't coach it, don't know how we're doing it. Throw it to you. How do you win? Because I can get one or two. How do you win all your games this season with 50% of the ball? Because we haven't got a clinical striker. Loon's not on 9, 10, 11. What is he? What are we doing well?
I mean, to answer the question directly, he doesn't believe in keeping the ball for keeping the ball's sake. He wants us to play with purpose and play with intent, and that means not necessarily always long ball. It means getting the ball into areas quickly that we want the ball in, whether it's a quick switch of play, whether it's a ball into centre mid rather than playing it to another centre back to play into centre mid. So he's clearly encouraging the players to. I wouldn't say not take risks, because that's what the assumption is around. You know, long ball football or direct football. It's not taking risks. It's playing percentage football. It's not. It's just getting the ball into areas where we can then put pressure on them. In rugby, they refer to teams who play like this. They play a kicking game. So they kick the ball up the pitch and they try and squeeze the opposition into their half and force them to make mistakes in their half. That's what a lot of our players built on, is forcing the opposition into areas of the pitch they don't want to be in. So it's not necessarily saying every week that area is going to change, but you can see from game to game, the certain games where you seem to be deliberately putting the ball into a certain area. So it's not always finding a player in that area or building up possession in that area. It's getting the ball in that area. And the times in the game where we do have a little bit more possession than the opposition, but generally speaking, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're putting the opposition into areas of the pitch and some, you know, forcing them into parts of their game that they're uncomfortable in, then you're going to be more effective. And I think that's generally the mentality. And it's just, I get the feeling, without being behind the scenes, that the messages are just so simple and they're easy for the players to latch on, i.e. this player doesn't enjoy being here. Let's get the ball onto that side of the pitch. Let's make them uncomfortable.
That's how you get to test them kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean... See
someone in an awkward position.
That's an individual trigger for individual players. So that's probably a little bit more specific. But generally, it's like the opposition like to do this at this time. That's when we go bang, and that's when we jump on them. You've seen it so many times when the Burnley centre backs and defenders of the weekend look to get their head up to play out. We literally pressed and pushed right in there. Even the centre backs were right up on the halfway line, because they were very rarely looking for the ball into space, apart from the ball in the channel. So they're looking to play into the centre forward, to then lay off and then play in behind. But we weren't even allowing the first ball to go in. So you can just see that it's not... I don't think the instructions on the ball are very... And you said at the start of the season, doesn't seem to know what what they're doing when they get the ball. I think now they've realised... We don't need to know every pattern of play, everything we're doing all the time. We just need to know that this is the objective, i.e. we're trying to get it here in this many passes. Sometimes, you know, it might have to go backwards to go forwards, but we're just doing it quickly. And everything we do is quite quick and quite deliberate. There's very rare you see players kind of dwelling on the ball. If anything, the one player who was most guilty of it was Inanna early in the season, when he kind of chewed the ball a little bit. Guy used to do it quite a bit. Most of those players now move the ball very fast. I think Patterson's another one that earlier on the season was kind of taking a few extra touches more than he wanted to. But for me, going back to the stats around the percentage possession, what you've got to remember is, going back to the previous point I've just made, then the more touches an individual player has and the slower he is on the ball, the more time you're in possession, the higher your percentage possessions are. So we're moving the ball on in 1, 2, 3 touches invariably, apart from maybe your Jack Harrisons and your McNeils. Other teams are maybe taking more touches and taking more time or being a little bit more patient with the build-up. That's not us. That's not this team. And you know what? It's not Everton, is it? That's not Everton. We don't do that. And that's our best team's never done that. It was always 100 mile an hour. It was always electric. It was fireworks. It was, you know, getting in people's faces. How long have we been saying that? How long have we been crying out for that? To get back to that aggression. And
dogs of war.
Yeah, I mean, I think dogs of war is a little bit disrespectful because Yeah, dogs of war suggests we just enjoy a fight and that's it. But I don't think that's the case. We're a lot more strategic. We're definitely doing things deliberately. We're making the opposition uncomfortable, but equally, we're hurting the opposition as well.
Last stat before we move away from Burnley. Me and you, long before this podcast started, I've ridiculed Everton getting corner kicks. Whether it's Mikel Arteta hitting the first man and then front of the park ends over it. Whether it's a number of players doing the same thing. Whether it's just... we just have seemingly been really toothless. Martin has given up on him. Remember, he didn't want to know. He'd rather have a throw in and pass it back and start the move that way. Last stat, every 11 corners this season, Everton scored a goal, the highest in the Premier League. How important is that now for us to have that ammo, or that weapon in our ammo?
It's incredible. And the last time I can remember us being this good on the ball, and again, let's not carry away, it's still only Christmas, we're only halfway, but this goes on the ball where we're scoring outfield goals, but also being such a threat from corners, is probably 95, 96 when we had Andy Inchcliffe, and we had obviously Duncan, Gary Speed, players who were so aggressive attacking the ball from set pieces, but also we had some weapons on the pitch. And that, you know, we talk about the team that this reminds me of, with the exception of me, Kanchelskis, we haven't got a Kanchelskis, but that's the team it probably reminds me. Yeah, it's Graeme Stewart in there. He's probably like, he's a core, you know, he's not, or maybe a little bit disrespectful to Stewart in terms of he has a bit more technical ability, but Stewart's maybe your McNeil, isn't he? You know, he didn't have that much pace, but he gets in there, he gets goals. You know, you get Gary Speed, God rest his soul. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, your big centre-half, you've got players who can take set plays, you've got... So, yeah... The last time I can remember us, as I say, being that good from set plays and that that much of a threat was that side. And look, I think it's they're all chipping in. That's the great thing about it. Tarkowski, how often, we've said it from the moment he signs him, how often he gets his head or gets the first contact on the ball is remarkable. He's done it even from the free kick where Michael Keane scores the weekend. And Arno was another player early on in his career, was getting the first contact a lot, but no. It wasn't really a killer blow, but you know, obviously Calvert-Lewin's always a threat in there. You know, we've got Jared Branthwaite who gets on the end of things, so everyone's chipping in with that as well. But it's a brilliant stat, and for the opposition, it just strikes fear into you because you're thinking we can't give a corner away. You don't if you get into that mindset, and it's an interesting dynamic because if you're an opposition defender, if you're an opposition team. And your manager gives you that stat and says, look, we need to be wary of Everton on corners. In your back of your mind, you're thinking, I can't give this corner away. And the minute you start thinking about that, you start giving fouls away. You start maybe allowing the winger to get past you because you don't want to actually put your foot in him and put it out for a corner. I know it sounds a bit mad, that, but it is. It definitely enters your head. So all those things now and all those stats that are starting to mount up in that way are definitely going to, you know, make the opposition in certain instances second thing. So it's great for us, but also it's just as, you know, it's just as intimidating for the opposition as well. But unbelievable starting. Again, a couple of players chipping into that with that as well. Garner's taking corners, McNeil's taking corners. Yeah. You know, Young was took a few corners as well. So we've got a few players as well, which is helpful. I think even back in the day, we talk about Andy Inchcliffe, it was always that same delivery that we put in the box. The fact you've got different players and different feet and different angles and stuff to put that in, that helps as well. So brilliant. Good one.
Tuesday night, Cup quarter final, Goodison Park lit up. You excited?
Massively excited. I haven't been this excited about a Cup game in a long while. For a number of reasons. Again, the reason that the team is playing so well, they're playing with such confidence. We're at Goodison. The draw can potentially open up for us. And we've never won this Cup. So it there's a lot of, again, the team, you've mentioned some records, some stats in there. The team are getting in the hang of setting records here and you know, destroying past misery and stats. It's another opportunity, a big opportunity. If the players are saying, you know, they really appreciate the fans, they're looking forward to playing every game, this is the real chance to start, you know, repaying that faith and to really enjoy being an Evertonian, because they'll see what it means to be an Everton player. They get the win tomorrow night. We're recording on a Monday, as it is. If they get that win tomorrow night, they
will
feel full
time. Will be,
oh yeah, exactly. And yeah,
give us Port Vale. Give us Port Vale
or Middlesbrough. It's Middlesbrough or Port Vale, aren't they playing each other?
Yeah,
Middlesbrough,
yeah.
Port Vale, and I'd take either of them. And or give us West Ham.
yeah, give us West Ham.
Which you mean Liverpool?
We're daring to dream here, but that's what good runs, that's what momentum does, that's what confidence does, and that's what we should be doing. This is what this podcast should be all about. Mm. Evertonians being happy and looking forward to big cup games. Last question on Fulham, because we've got some socials, and then I know we're going to look back on 2024. Big question for me. I asked this almost straight away on Saturday.
2023.
I'm getting this wrong all the time. 2023. Big question for me. Formation and personnel, does it now change for Tuesday? We played so well in that formation. Michael Keane got man of the match. You've came on and praised Ben Godfrey. Tarkowski can't come out. That leaves Jared Branthwaite ready and able to come back in. I don't think Garner Guy would come back in anyway, but he's available. Possibly Ashley Young available. What does the manager do here?
Branthwaite comes back in, depending on the fitness of Michalenko, whether it was just in, it was in an illness or something.
He had some sort of tight muscular injury.
Okay. You'd suggest then that he'll be okay, I would imagine. It's an interesting one, because I think regardless of Michael Keane getting man of the match, and he obviously got man of the match because he's got the goal as well, I think out of the players who played, who had the biggest impact on the team, I would say it was Ben Godfrey.
So Finch Farm today, Monday, is he setting Everton up in a three at the back or a two at the back, do you think?
The interesting thing, and I am going to answer your question, is the amount of times in the game it looked like we maybe were playing a back four or a back five, doesn't really matter. It's the personnel that ends up creating the shape that you play at the back. So for instance, there was times at you know, the weekend where it looked like Godfrey was playing left back, and it looked like you had Keane and Tarkowski, and you had Patterson right back, and then McNeil was playing a little bit deeper just to stay closer to Godfrey. So he's got options there. He's definitely got options, and you know, whether he chooses to bring Michalenko in or he keeps Godfrey to that left hand side, and I call it the left hand side. I think Godfrey was at his best. And he's shown again at the weekend when he was playing the left side of the fence. Mm. I think the one change you would definitely make would be Michael Keane for Branthwaite, regardless. I think Branthwaite's been outstanding this season. Mm. And although Keane done okay, he done so against a 33-year-old Jay Rodriguez and not a lot else. Whereas I think the players... I think the players who were defending against the wingers had a tougher job at the weekend. Michael Keane was mainly central. So yeah, I would definitely bring Branthwaite in. I don't really mind whether he chooses to play a deeper fullback, because if he plays Michalenko or he plays Godfrey, I don't think tactically that changes things. I think Michalenko has had a very good season. Mm. I think Godfrey played relatively well. I would suggest, knowing how loyal the manager is to players who play well in a certain system and how well Michalenko has done, I would suggest that Godfrey and Keane would both come back out for Branthwaite and Michalenko. Probably gives us more natural balance if we're going to attack a little bit more tomorrow night than maybe we intended to do at Burnley. So I think if all being well, if all the players are fit, then I think those two do come back out despite how well he plays.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd probably prefer that. I'd go back to the Newcastle, the Chelsea, the Forest performance.
The home games,
that formation.
Do you know what you would say? And we were crying out for it, weren't we, going into this run of home games? We need to have a way of winning home games now.
Yeah.
A way of winning away games now. Yeah, exactly. He's done that now. He's won a few home games. So you're right. I think that's a really good point, is go back to that now. This is going to be more like a Newcastle-Chelsea game than it is a Burnley game. No doubt about it. Fulham had a disappointing result of the weekend, but before that, it scored 16 goals in, I think, three or four games. So that, you know, we all know what Marco Silva's like. We know he's going to have a lot of possession of the ball, but we know he's vulnerable, as teams are vulnerable, sometimes overplaying. We know they've got dribblers, and you know, I think Mykhailenko relishes a battle in a 1v1 against the dribbler, so you put him against, you know, Willian or whoever it is they're going to play on that flank, and I think that's where they do get their joy, is getting out to the wingers and combining in the wide areas and getting it in. So I think we do need to be confident in there. And it's, again, I guess it's then who's fit, whether Seamus Coleman is fit, whether he's still carrying that knock, whether it was just, you know, playing a couple of games in the space of a week was a lot for him. I reckon if Coleman's fit, he'll come back in as well.
But good shout.
We'll see.
We're not going to be doing an away preview, an opposition preview. It's too fast of a turnaround. So there's no Fulham preview as such, but there will be a Tottenham preview. There will be a Manchester City preview, but we'll close the show on our plans for the Christmas break. Judge, you have picked four socials for us to tackle. We're getting into transfer window time of the year, so a few tweets are based on that. First one, EFC Picks. He said he's seen today that Conor Gallagher is reported to be available in January, and he's added, I think he'd be a fantastic fit in a Sean Dyche team. Would you like to see a Conor Gallagher at Everton if we could make it work?
Snap your hands off for a Conor Gallagher. I agree. I think he's got everything that Sean Dyche would look for in a midfielder in terms of energy, aggression, very decent technically, chips in with goals, certainly not afraid to fly into a tackle. I think there's an element of ill-discipline at times about him, but I think that's probably born out of frustration of coming in and out of the team. Didn't really show that as much at Palace, but he would be a hugely, hugely impressive addition. Because if you could get him back to that goal-scoring midfield that he was at Palace, where I think he got like 10 goals in a season and as many assists, it's probably the one thing you would, you know, Decore aside, the one thing you would level at that midfield, really. I know Onana's got a goal at the weekend. They've only really between them, take Decore out of it, because he's always playing like a false nine. Between them, he's probably only got 4 or 5 goals, haven't they, between all the midfielders. So I think that's one area that you would love to see us strengthen. You know, I mentioned it then, talking about Gary Speed, go back to, you know, Tim Cahill, and although Tim Cahill was probably playing a bit more of a Decore position as well, but I just feel like we probably could do with a few more goals in that midfield.
Leon Osborne used to chip in all the
time,
didn't
he? Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, 100%, great shout, and I'm sure there'd be quite a bit of money involved in that transfer, which we haven't got at the moment, but if you could do a loan deal maybe to the end of the season and then reassess the situation in the summer, yeah, I couldn't think of many players that could fit the bill better than him.
Becky 1878 on Twitter, she's asked us, what would you like to see in a January transfer window? Now I'm gonna start this off, and I don't think you're gonna go here, but I'll try and take the conversation this way a little bit. I'd like to see us keep the squad together. I think what's coming with big performances and more eyes being on you is that more teams might look at Amadou Onana, they might look at James Garner, they might look at a number of our players now and go, Jared Branthwaite.
Yeah.
Do Everton need the money? And, you know, without getting too much into detail, a lot relies on the takeover. Things could happen where Everton do need the money. So for me, I'd like to see us keep the squad together. Obviously, I'd like to add one or two. But addition-wise, would you like to see Everton maybe go another striker, left-back, midfielder? Where would you like to see us go?
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more with your first statements. I'm more worried about us losing players than I am about who we're going to pick up. I haven't thought for a second about who we're going to pick up, to be honest, because I do believe that if we get Coleman back fit, you know, you've got two or three options there, you know, including the option to put, you know, Young across to the other side. If Mykhailenko needs cover, you've Godfrey in there, who Tottenham are apparently looking at. You know, in midfield, I think you've got enough options in there. I think if we lose Dan Juma, which is rumoured to maybe happen in January, then we might...
Bit light enough for me, that centre midfield area.
I think the midfielders, if anything, you could maybe do a picking up someone on loan or someone maybe on a loan to buy. But that aside, assuming that the key players stay fit, I think we're absolutely fine in the centre forward position. Again, assuming that Dominic Calvert-Lewin can keep himself fit, I'm more than confident in Beto being able to deputise for two or three games if required. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that's got to be the priority, and it's hugely concerning to me with us playing the way we are. That clubs are going to be looking at those players, particularly because we don't play in Europe. So you've got clubs thinking, okay, we could bring someone in here who could make a huge difference in the second half of the season and maybe get us to a position where we're finishing two or three positions up, finishing the Champions League, etc. the Man United thing where, you know, United could be, could have a new manager in the coming weeks. I think there's a couple of players in our team, Branthwaite, you just mentioned then, and Arne,
yeah,
that would hugely impact their team.
I could see them fitting right in for United.
Right in, exactly. They walk in that team. Yeah. So yeah, that I agree with you. There's no one I've really thought about, or not one position in particular. I think we're weak, although I think we're a little bit light in midfield. I'd be delighted if we get through that window with all of our players intact, and maybe even better, a few new contracts in the mix as well.
Mm. Last question I've chosen from our Twitter. It's from Gaz. So thanks everyone for sending the questions. We could only pick a few. Gaz, I'm gonna leave this one to you. I'm not gonna touch you. It's great to see an Everton team running through brick walls, but when the time comes and we eventually need to add some quality on the ball, maybe some players who can pull rabbits out of the hat, maybe a Dele Alli, how do you then get the balance right to get someone in the team, maybe what Gaz referring to, who can do something these other players can't at the minute, and then the balance shifts? How do you manage that?
It could only, in the way that we play, in the system we play at the moment, it could only be in the position of like a Decore. I think, unless you're gonna bring someone in like an Andre Gomes, in his, you know, when we first got him in his palm, who plays at the pivot or plays deeper in the midfield and tries to control the game from there, or you got, again, I'm referring to players here who are probably a little bit substandard, but you know the Everton fans will know what I'm getting at. You know, a Bernard who kind of comes in off the side and maybe creates a little bit, you know, a Pienaar type thing, someone like that. I think under Dyche and the way he plays, you'd have to do it in the shape of the wingers. So let's look at Jack Harrison, for example. Some people have been underwhelmed by his performances and his output. If you brought someone in that position who chipped in with more goals, you know, more like a Richarlison, for example. Mm. I wouldn't say Richarlison's a pulling rabbit out of a hat, but you know what I mean? But I think if you're going to be dead specific about it, I think when we're playing at home and we're maybe going to be having more of the ball, you wouldn't mind every now and again either seeing Decore drop deeper or Decore coming out to the team and having a proper ball playing number 10, someone on there.
Would that player Gaz was referred to, being Dele Alli, would he be someone that you'd like to see?
Dele Alli anywhere near his best would be a huge asset for this team. A huge asset, more so because he's always played off the nine at his best, you know. Yeah. Behind Harry Kane, off Harry Kane is where he plays his best. He's technically better than Decore, there's no doubt about that. I think we'd lose a bit of physicality and aggression up there, but again, I think against some of the teams that we lost points against earlier on in the season, if you would have had a Calvert-Lewin and a Dele Alli at 60 for 70% of his best, you'd have walked through those teams comfortably.
Instance,
yeah. So yeah, I think that's a fair point. Dele Alli would fit the bill. If it wasn't Dele Alli, though, again, I think that would be the position they would have to slot into in this team.
I did lie. There was one more question, and I wanted to end the first half of this show on this. Christmas plans, boys. It was that simple. Rob the Blue has just said Christmas plans. I'll start. I'm at home this year. Cooking, God help who I'm cooking for, but I'm cooking at home. Wife, two children, mother coming over. We'll do the in-laws in the night. No doubt, you know me by now, there'll be a few cold beverages
in there.
How
many have you got?
I've got my mum coming over, and then we've got two kids and Becca, so I'll be on the phone to you going, where's this turkey go? What am I doing with this 16 gammon?
16 I've got.
I'm planning to do the gammon the night before. And then...
No need.
I know, but that's what someone said. Someone said do it the night before, I'm thinking.
Gammon doesn't take long at all. It goes there dry as well, gammon.
Tell me in the comments, any good chefs in there.
Again, there'll be loads of people in the comments, but for me, I always do the gammon at about 5 o'clock, because we have our gammon in the night, you see. We don't have it with the dinner.
No,
you have it with the dinner. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so we'll turkey gammon, and then we're going to do all of
If you're short of space, no, you're surely cooking the turkey the night before, not the gammon.
No, I was doing turkey first thing in the morning.
Do the turkey the night before. If you're going to cook either of them the night before, cook the turkey the night before, and cook the gammon bit more closer to the
We've got a 5-year-old who's wrote his Christmas list. That's going to be exciting. A 2-year-old who's feeling the magic. So my Christmas is going to be family foods and beer. Judgy?
Yeah, similar. Probably more wine than beer, because I don't get as hungover off it, he says. I've got 16 in ours that I'm cooking for. I love it, though. I love nothing more than just getting up, watch the kids, open the presents. I do most of me prep the night before, so all the vegetables and that are cut and sitting in water. And I've got a list, like a lesson plan. In front of me, if I do this at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, right the way up. Loads of stuff to keep the food warm. It's just that craziness of actually putting it out on the plate then,
yeah.
And then realizing you're having put like a load of vegetables on everyone's plate, or you've left the stuffing in the oven, or
you serving the meat, or is it self-serve the meat?
No, we'll serve everything apart from things like cauliflower, cheese, and bits like that we'll just put on the table for people to pick up. But I'll have like literally a list of the 16 people and what everyone has.
So that's all detailed.
Detailed.
Marco Silverball Christmas dinner.
Total in the detail. But yeah, looking forward to it.
Thanks for that. Look, let's look back on 2023, both as Evertonians and owners of a podcast. As Evertonians, one of our first podcasts in January was standing in the middle of a no disrespect, what is like a footballing war zone kind of thing in the Park End, protest, Southampton at home. Lampard was dead man walking. Fans were irate. Those accusations of the board and the fans had gone at that point. Now we're sitting here talking Turkey Cup quarterfinals. It's been a mad year, hasn't it?
It has been a mad year. Well, I actually made a note before the show because I thought you might have asked me like, what was the lowest point of the year.
That was the
lowest point of the year for me. I remember it because I was sitting in like the nice seat in the park, and that day one of my mates has got some tickets there, so he gave me and my dad some tickets, and again the nicer part of the park ends. We had a nice little scram before, and Anna gave us the lead, and again we unravelled, and again the forlorn figure of Frank Lampard standing there not really knowing what to do, clearly just a little bit lost, and like just wanted Goodison to swallow him up, and I remember at the time feeling sorry for him because, you know, he'd winged in and saved us. He was
with his charm.
He was basking in that, yeah. And we'd fell for his charm, but you know, he clearly wasn't getting a tune out of those players. And don't even think Takore was anywhere near the pitch at that time, nowhere near the squad. Never mind the
pitch.
He
was on his way to Fulham.
Yeah,
he was on his way to Fulham. He was banished with the reserves.
The irony. But yeah, that was the lowest point of the year for me.
Look, we've spoken enough on this podcast, but it is a big talking point. I don't want to go over the point deduction because I don't know what's going to happen. It could be tomorrow, it could be March. We find out. So we've gone in depth. We're really disappointed. The severity of it. We've seen how the fans have reacted to it. One thing that I can't believe that this is a secondary talking point now, because a lot of fans have wanted it for a long time, is the change of ownership. We as a podcast made the decision in January to put our name on the Altogether Now motion. You've not always been as strongly opinionated as me, angry at the board. You've been a bit more pragmatic in relation to, you can see positives, and then you snapped. Pricey was on our podcast back in the day. He snapped, he said, let's go for it. We're almost 12 months on from that decision we made as a podcast to put our name on that. I think the fans have been nothing short of amazing, and that's not me being biased towards some friends and some of our friends who do it. Look back at this year, from the first protests to what the fans are doing now. Just, I'm not being biased. It's incredible.
It is. Yeah, you think about, again, the fans' reaction to the points deduction. It wasn't like, let's just start kicking off. And it was like, really, like, calculated. Let's do this, let's do that. Let's make sure we're seen. Let's make sure we're heard. And more than anything else, let's make sure we get behind them players and let them know we're with them. And that's been the general mentality. I think there was probably a moment, I think more towards the end of 2022, but it was getting a little bit horrible and a little bit twisted. And
it was 21 that was Benitez.
Maybe. You're right. Yeah, I'm getting my ears mixed up now. But yeah, it was we definitely lost our way a little bit, I think, as a fan base. But then when, you know, again, certain groups started getting together and they started talking about what they want to achieve and how they could maybe impact things. And then, you know, the coach, all the coach greetings and everything. I think that was the turning point for me, the coach greetings. And the reason being is that the fans realised, well, this is what we can do. Yeah. This is where we can have an impact.
The banners, you look at the, we sit in the Park Ends, and when the teams finish warming up and that process of Goodison changes, and you see the banners coming down, it's unbelievable.
It is class, yeah. It's a sight to behold. And it's one of them things that I'm sure it will happen, and I'm sure it'll happen on a bigger scale when we move to Brandley Moor, but you want to retain all that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it could really quickly become a very, soulless place, couldn't it, if we don't retain all of that spirit and everything that goes with it and the personality. But yeah, the fans have been unbelievable, and particularly through this period. And the players can certainly feel, and as you say, the comments of players like Hanana, who's very new, you know, in terms of new to Merseyside, new to this country, he's been taken back by it. But I think now you look at the club, and I think Izzy Christiansen said it really well at the weekends. Joey Barnold, hate me saying that, but she said it really well at the weekends. How, you know, you look at the club now and you step back and you go, okay, there looks to be a bit of order at the top. The stadium's not far from being finished. They've took the medicine, if you call it that, with the deduction, and they've kicked on past that and kicked, you know, battered it out the park. They're in the quarterfinal of a cup competition. They've got a pretty stable team. They've got a young team. Mm. There's a lot of things to actually be positive about
it's
now.
It's the rebirth kind of thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But again, going back to your point, that the fans have played a part in making sure that rebirth has been allowed to happen, and has happened in the Premier League, because it was, you know, we've been close on two occasions in the last two seasons to that happening. Thankfully, it looks like, things can change. It looks like we should be some way away from that if we continue the way we are. But yeah, credit to the fans, and as we said at the start of the show, and as I'll reiterate, they particularly away fans deserve every moment that they're getting at the moment, every goal that they're celebrating.
2023, we still get questions every week, and I try and ignore them and try and bypass them, and it's not because we're being cowardly, but we get questions on Bill Kenwright all the time. We said when we found out that he passed, he was on a show after it. We said that we want to draw a line under the criticism. I think you only have to go back to see when the accounts were released, the show that me and Judgy did, where we heavily criticised Bill Kenwright. We made a decision as mates on a podcast that we weren't going to go forward and do that. But we did sadly lose Bill. We haven't touched upon it a lot, but that's a big moment to look back on, isn't it, that Bill passed away?
Yeah, and sadly, and this, I was about this, sadly, it kind of got forgotten, didn't it? And it sounds weird to say that. It was such a crazy time at the club, wasn't it? And I think the points deduction comes so close after Bill's death that it was like the club weren't allowed to mourn Worthy, and you know, there was some poignant, some nice moments at Goodison. But yeah, it almost seems like a distant memory, like it was ages ago.
Yeah.
It was only best part of what, 2.5 months ago now. But yeah, obviously a hugely sad moment for the club. He's someone who's been present in good, you know, relatively good times, but a lot of bad times, and he has a tough time at the helm. You'd have to say that. Again, some of it, admittedly, could have potentially self-inflicted. Some of it was just, you know, he's a victim of the circumstances. But like a lot of Evertonians, he went through the mill as well. He was always there. And look, I'm sure he's looking down now, and maybe he's playing his part up there himself, because it's been a remarkable turnaround in that period as well. But yeah, sad moments, and yeah, it's bizarre that he's actually not there.
It is, yeah. And I felt it important to address that, because we still get questions on Bill on our socials, and we're not gonna go there. Similarly, like when Mascheri finally goes, I don't want to dwell on that. I don't want to keep pointing that way here because of other people. Judgy said there, it's like a rebirth, and I do think it's important that we look forward. Before we do look forward to 2024, Judgy, final few questions on 2023. We've had some amazing guests on, as always. Some of our previous guests we still speak to, even though not on a podcast. Guest players I can't believe we speak to still, who just say good podcast,
yeah.
Stuff like that. But highs and lows of the podcast.
Oh, sorry, we've got to mention something. Tony Bellew. Good friend of the show, incredible performance on I'm a Celeb.
He watches the show, yeah.
Yeah, we've got to mention Tony. He's been on the show a few times. He's a fan of the show, not as much as we're a fan of him, but it was great for others outside of Liverpool, if you like, and outside of the Everton circles, to see what a genuine person he is, and a proper personality, a family man above all else, and a top Evertonian. It was great that the couple of moments when he told him the scores. Oh, that's our face.
We did the
brilliant. But yeah, sorry.
You're right in saying it. Podcast away from like being a fan. What's the podcast highs and lows for you again? Because we've had some guests on. I'll give mine first. Being down at Finch Farm and speaking, having a relationship now with the Everton women's team is something that we're really proud of. At the podcast, we speak to the club, and they've been generous and given us almost exclusive access to help grow Everton women. I'm proud of that. But I was so happy to walk around Goodison Park with Mel Harvey in the summer.
Wow, yeah.
And she asked if she could sit in the manager's seat where her dad sat to record it.
Mm.
to give our friend that. She thanked us for that. For me to speak about, for me to look over at the Gladys Street where my dad, who's no longer with us, took me and feel that. And I did say at the time, I'd love Judgy to come and do this next year with his dad and have that recording. Mm. So maybe we'll try and make that work. But that's my high, really, the Goodison Park recording this year for the podcast. The low, yeah, the Southampton game I can get, but I also look back and if you look from a, not a business head on, this isn't a business, but we got such traction from that. So, it's the most people tuned into that.
So 15,000, 20,000
people tuned into that. And because of that, we had guests on and things. So little moments like that, and the moments aren't good, but you sit back now. There's not really been a really big podcast, though. There's been times where we've maybe had to record remotely when we haven't wanted to, and we've got stick and things, but I'm really proud of what we've done this year. Have you got highs and lows?
Yeah, I think one of the highs is securing here in a new studio. Yeah. And as you say, working with the Pod Cafe has been fantastic. It's really raised the quality of what we're doing. Without a doubt, a big high for me now is coming here. I enjoy coming here. And again, it's we're privileged to have that opportunity.
At one moment, I was jealous of you sitting in the house of Mick Lyons.
Of course. My
father-in-law says is Mr. Evan.
Oh my God, that was incredible. Singing I'm glad songs. You reminded that. That was, it was mad, yeah, we were singing Everton songs, yeah. That was surreal. That honestly was surreal. And the most surreal moment, and I'm sure I told this on the podcast, is when Joe Royal and Colin Harvey walked in. I thought Joe Royal, Colin Harvey's mind. I didn't know he was massive, yeah. That was unbelievable. Standing there, you know, I'd recorded with Mick and I'd sat there and we'd had a cup of tea and stuff and had a little walk around the house. And then I was about to get off and them two walked in. So standing there briefly in their company, just talking and thinking this is just mad. You know, speaking with the last manager to win an FA Cup with Everton and two of the most decorated individuals in Everton's history for you know, on the pitch as players and off the pitch as coaches and managers was just madness. And Mick Lyons, what a lovely fella, absolute gent. And yeah, as you say, just a huge part of our history. So we've had, like, you know, you write down some of the people who you spend time with now on this podcast, and it is such an honour.
Do you realise you've interviewed half the 85 team?
Yeah, I did realise that.
Unbelievable.
And Psycho Pat actually applied for the job in my work, so I've interviewed him as well.
So, we've come a long way. We made the decision at the tail end of 22. Well, say you make the decision. Behind the scenes, Judgy was always pushing for face-to-face recordings, and we'd done remote, and Judgy found a location, told me I was going for a pint, and then put a camera in front of me, in my face, my wedding meal. So, and then we'd done that, looked good. Judgy sourced Rock Salt in Crosby. I sourced the amazing Hot Wok, who now the Blue House, the Winslow have had us in, and now we're here in the Pod Cafe, and I feel like we are coming a long way, and it's great when people come over to us and say hello and stuff. I got up the toffees and the Quick Fit the other day, and it, you know, weird, but great. So I think it's nice to have. We're not the biggest podcast by far. There's podcasts who charge money. There's podcasts who make a living off it, and rightly so. Brilliant content, work long hours. I think we've got a really nice audience. I like connecting with our audience on Twitter and stuff. But away from the podcast now, where we close out a little bit and just look back on Everton, high and low in 2023. My low would be walking out the game when Newcastle beat us 4-1 in April, and I just thought we're done. Because I think Fulham had just done us as well.
Yeah.
And then the fans had made this big effort to greet the coach, and there's fireworks and there's lots of banners. And Isaac walked past our defence and they were walking past us. It could have been 6 or 7. And that was the lowest. I went home that night and the following morning said to me, Mrs., I've got to get my little boy ready for relegation here. Like, he's going to get picked on at school and teased gently. Like, but I was at that level of going down. And the highest is probably now. Bournemouth wasn't really. Like, it was relief. Such relief. We didn't go out. We went for a couple of pints and called it a night. Now, seeing what I'm seeing is a bit of a high for me. What would you say, lows and highs, watching the Blues?
Do you know what, bizarrely? Bournemouth is closer. Bournemouth's closer on the lows, you know.
Like a realisation.
Yeah, because I just thought, this is... When's this going to end? Do you know what I mean? And part of me and again, you're always quick to dismiss this, and I almost dismissed it. Part of me was thinking, I don't even enjoy this anymore. I almost want the team to go down to just kind of stop the clock and reset it. And I'm just so desperate for the rebirth we're talking about now. And again, we might still be being premature here, by the way, with the word rebirth or whatever, but it just feels so much better. But yeah, the Bournemouth game was bittersweet. And that, you know, sweet we stayed up, and it was like, you know, it's Takore again with a bit of a pop shot, and we stayed up by the skin of our teeth. It wasn't nice, and as you say, we just got off, we didn't stay out or not, and it wasn't even feel the same.
2 pints, did you mean? So that's it.
Didn't deserve, and even that, the fact that we didn't want to celebrate staying up, just showing how low the club had stooped. I didn't want to see Goodison for the foreseeable. I just wanted to just go on Aldi, get away from it all. So yeah, I think that's actually up there with the lowest, even though, you know, we managed to stay up, and the high, goodness me,
there's not been many really, has there?
No, there hasn't, you know. I mean, recently you can't get away from the results. Recently, I'm trying to think of one of the ones that
we've covered the fans. I think that's been the best part of watching the club this season, probably, really. Yeah. And watched, and for whatever reason, without putting words in your mouth, I just think that points deduction has brought everyone together. Whether you like Dice, don't like Dice. Whether you like Young, don't like Young. Like Mascheri, don't like Mascheri. That's gone out the window. Everyone's for Everton again, aren't they?
Yeah, that's it. And again, I guess that's coming out of it now and being, you know, a few points clear of the relegation zone and stuff. I said to you last night, when we were talking about what we were going to cover on the podcast today, I said the interesting one would be now, almost looking at that point deduction now, and I know that it's, you know, you can look at it and go, we would be, you know, whatever, ninth or eighth or whatever, but we've got that monkey off our back now, it's gone. Like, they can't do it with the... There's a room where they could do it again for another year, but they can't bring that back up again. They've sentenced us, not going to be any worse than 10 points. We can move on now. It's almost like someone who's had the debt wiped, you know,
gone bankrupt.
Gone bankrupt. What are you going to do to me now? I'm done now. Do you know what I mean? We've all been close to that scenario, and go, okay, well, at least I can breathe again now, and I can just get on with things. So it's the first time at the moment where I feel like we can look forward. Again, I drive past that stadium most days going into work, home from work, and it never fails to wow me. And just knowing that that's going to be our home in less than 18 months' time is just amazing. And again, the club is definitely moving forwards now, and we can look forward to certainly the better times.
2024. What do you want? Not predictions, more what would you like to see? Expectations as an Evertonian and also as the co-owner of Across the Park podcast. What do you want from the podcast, and what do you want to see from Everton in the next 12 months?
I think from the podcast, it'd be good to get some more guests in the studio, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we've always been proud of that from, as you say, from our early days. I think I'd like to strengthen the relationship with the club and as well as continuing to cover the women, maybe do some stuff on the men's side as well. From the club's perspective, I would just like us to stabilise ourselves and again, to be in the position, from my point of view, I want to be in the position to start looking at improving this team, improving this club, and not being stripped of things constantly, whether it's being stripped of points or being stripped of players. I'd love to see this summer being almost a statement to go, well, no, and we're not selling these players, we're going to get these other players in. I think the reality is there are going to be certain players that will move on if we can get the right money for them and we can strengthen them, great. I'd love to see us, above all else, to get our business done early. Mm-hmm. You know, Kevin Thelwell, again, he's got a lot of credit in the bank for me now, but he would go a long way better than his predecessors if he can get his business done early. And that's both ins and outs. And give the manager, which I don't think any manager in the last 10, 15 years has had this luxury of going into pre-season with the full complement of what he's working with.
That's a really good point, actually. I didn't look at it from that angle. Podcast-wise, let's not lose anyone else. We've lost someone a year. If I lose you, I'm done for, absolutely done for. So Pricey had to leave at the start of this year. Before that, we had Reds on, who covered Reds, and they all decided to get up and go, God knows what they're up to anymore. I don't know what they're doing with themselves.
We are still our mates, unfortunately.
Podcasts keep growing. I think you're right by saying we've got a good relationship with the women's side of the club. And I'd never want that to end. I had legs. You know, me and you've got young girls. We've got daughters who probably want to play the game and should be supported to play the game. So that's important for me to continue with that. And yeah, I'd love to get down to Goodison and do some more bits for She Goes. You know, some more podcasts to Goodison. And we ask the question. Trust me, we do ask, but we can only ask so many people so many times. That's the end of the last studio podcast of 2023. Georgie, before I sign off, anything you want to say to viewers, listeners? Don't ask them to like, share and subscribe. But you can give them a heartfelt message if you want.
But just on that note, we've grown, I think, from about 1,500 subscribers to over 3,000 on YouTube this year. And as you always say, it means a lot that people, it is only just clicking one button, but it means people get alerts every time our podcasts go out. We see that in the growth of the numbers. It, you know, gives us a couple of quid here and there to improve things and obviously to support.
And our social media followers now 15,000 as well, which is
brilliant. Yeah, it's a privilege, and again, we do really appreciate it. And I forgot Milo probably from this year was it the Pickford thing? Was this year?
I didn't really want to pick that up.
You could have done, yeah. That was probably one of my lows, but
that was where the podcast nearly ended.
Well,
it wasn't even on our podcast, you said.
Socials ended up actually climbing after it.
Yeah.
That was worth mentioning.
Some method to the madness.
Yeah. I forgot what you'd even asked me now. Just thank you for sticking with me, particularly after making comments in the summer that I wouldn't even say devised Evertonians, just turned most of them against me. And I still get jokes about it now, but look, you know, we're in the privileged position, as I say, where a lot of you do listen to us, you know, week in, week out, and watch us, and you know, the when you read the questions out and you hear the same names, it's great that some of them are so loyal and continuously follow us, and for some reason actually respect some of our opinions as well. So yeah, that's all I want to say. And again, a huge thank you to the team at the Pod Cafe for helping give us this platform now and move us on.
Last show of 2023 in the studio.
Sorry, I missed one out. A massive one as well. Globe Heating and Gas.
Oh yeah,
been with us the whole way now, and this is not a business plug. This is a personal one. Lee at Globe's a good friend. But he's got a cracking business there, and he's been with us, you know, through the tough times, and he was the first person that he messaged me on all the Pickford stuff went on. What are you doing? But massive thanks to you, Lee, and the team, and enjoy your Christmas, because I know December is murder for him, you know, trying to get everyone's stuff done before Christmas Day. So thanks a lot, Lee, and hopefully you'll continue to support us in 2024.
Yeah, top man, Lee. We are planning to do a new advert with them as well, aren't we, in the new year, so we'll get some more gas and heating stuff out there for you guys. He's our mate, but he's brilliant at what he does, so please head over and have a little look. This is the final show of 2023 that me and Judge are going to record in the Pod Cafe studios. There's a high possibility of a cup instant match reaction. We don't tend to do the cup games. That's a bit of a hangover from when the Reds just didn't want to do anything. In their Champions League game, they didn't want to record, and we matched them. But why not? Why not do an instant match reaction after Fulham? Instant match reaction after Manchester City. But you know those shows are 5-6 minutes and they're instant, and we're not going to break anything down up until the new year now. So in this environment, we wish you very Merry Christmas, Blues. Thank you so much for your support. Across the Park podcast, it means the world. For thousands of you to watch me and Judgy and listen to us and engage, this is just mind-blowing. Thank you so much, everybody. We hope you have a fantastic Christmas, fantastic New Year, because Sean's Ice's Toffees are going to win it all. And your points deduction, it counted for. Up the top.